We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the latest OBR Film Breakdown. It is your Wednesday, April 17th episode. Jake Burns, Andrew Spade here. We are going to talk about a couple things that happened in Berea, specifically in terms of player quotes, and we had some retirement ceremonies take place today. Before we get to that, though, we're going to start with Nick Chubb's reworked contract. Important to note those specific details came out about the numbers that we wanted to share with you guys. We told you back when we originally discussed this situation, we would circle back, and Jack Duffin did a great job writing this up for us at the OBR. So we have those specifics to share with you guys. Andrew, I welcome you in and ask you first and most importantly, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Jake. It is a full-blown summer here where I am in North Carolina. It's been near 80 the last 2 days.
So 85 it's just, here today, Andrew.
It's warmer there somehow. Okay, well, you know what? Surprise. I'm shocked, but I enjoy it just in terms of, like, it's nice to finally get to the point of the year where it doesn't feel like we're going to have, now knock on wood, right, but it doesn't feel like we're going to have another real big cold snap. And so getting outside a little bit has been enjoyable, and I feel great. I mean, we haven't really talked about this, or we didn't talk about it last night on the live stream. Great sports weekend, Jake, with the Masters, which is, I know we both enjoy watching. And then I don't know if you enjoy mixed martial arts at all, but UFC put together a crazy card on Saturday night. So I watched that. And then we had the Guardians playing a doubleheader on Saturday. It felt like you didn't have to put too much effort in to find a lot of really entertaining sports action, which is rare. It feels like a little rare in mid-April.
I think people knock this time of year for sports. I mean, I love April, May, largely because I start to care about the NBA a little bit, because playoff basketball is like
different sport.
The highest level of chess of the sport you'll find, and it's really fun to watch the craziness of that stuff happen as there's just more and more, you know, fun teams. We hope the Cavs can put together some semblance of a run in the playoffs. I don't think many people are optimistic about that, but it'll be fun to watch them. But you're right, the Masters is like, I just love the cycle of it, having it up on one of my monitors, watching it in my office, having it on my phone, immediately deleting the app after the Masters is over because I have no purpose for this app on my phone after the tournament ends. But I just love how they cover it. I love that the coverage is free. I've said it a million times now. That's one of the few bucket. Like, I don't mind if I don't get to do a lot of sports. That's just one place I have to find my way to at some point. So we'll keep our fingers crossed on the raffle. One of these years, it'll work out in my favor. But fun to watch, and especially fun to watch like a really truly dominant golfer when they're just zoned in, as Scheffler was. It's just it's a different sport for those guys. And a great hypothetical question was asked, Andrew. And I cannot think of who asked the question, but I give them credit. It was a pretty viral thing. They asked the question, could you win the Masters if all you had to do was putt? Every hole you start with your ball at the furthest spot away from the hole possible on the green, and you're putting. Everybody else is.
I get the same number of strokes, though.
Off the tee box for everybody else. You're not getting any handicap help. You're just putting. Could you win the Masters just putting?
No.
Those greens are awful. They're so hard.
Yeah.
I don't think people get it.
It would be like putting in a skate park. That's what I would compare it to.
It is like the thing I think we're not going to, this is a full blown two average Joes talking golf, but like the average fan of golf does not understand slope. And like you go play on your local track near you, some of which are nice. They have no change in the slope of the land underneath your feet. Hitting the golf ball when it's below your feet or above it changes the difficulty so much. And when you watch these guys and you get like, I think you get spoiled, Andrew, when you watch it from up high, how the greens just look the same everywhere. But when they give you that random, like a guy's hitting maybe a 40 yard pitch or something close to the green and you see the slope of these greens, you're like, oh my, like you have to hit it on one specific level. Mm-hmm. And if you don't hit it on this level of the green, it's going to run 50 yards one direction and be off the green and way away, or it's going to run 20 feet past the hole. Like you have to go around the course and know where all of the zones are of the greens that you can land it. And to think you could putt on some of those shelves up and down. I mean, good Lord, man.
The best part of any Masters is when they cut to somebody putting and they're faced away from the hole.
Correct.
And you have to decipher in that moment, is he drunk? What's happened? And then he puts it and the ball goes away from the hole, stops and turns around and comes back towards the hole. And you realize, oh, I there's a slope there that I can't see that is so severe that if you putted it right at the hole, it would run off the green and into a lake or something.
Right. That's like the, I think, is it 17? No, it's not 17. It might be 16 where you have to, where Tiger hit the famous chip shot that was up above Burns the hole.
Yeah, that's 16.
It's 16. He hits it above, and it like it's, the hole has changed some over the years, but like the funneling that ball does back down into the lower pocket they put it into on 18 in the final round. Like, go back if you haven't done this. Maybe you're a young listener, or maybe you're somebody who just hasn't watched that golf shot in a long time. Don't watch when he hits it. See if you can find the replay of him mapping out where he wants to land it and understand how nonsensical it is for a guy to sort of pitch the golf ball, like, I don't know, 50 feet past the hole and let it run backward into the hole. It's just, it's bananas. And he hit the same, he had an unbelievable, in 2019, he had an unbelievable tee shot there that obviously ran back down toward the hole and almost damn near went in the thing. So, yeah, that is the amazing part of what makes Augusta unique. And there's other courses. Like I said, I'm really excited, Andrew, to go to Valhalla next month and like see what it looks like as close as I can possibly see it, what some of these holes look like, the greens, the difference, because, you know, I see it at the Memorial almost every, I try to go every year and it's there, it's real. But like when these, you know, the majors take place, they want these things to be really significant. And I just, the TV doesn't do a great, it's obviously the view you have to have, but like, you can't see it. You just can't see it. And it's kind of blows your mind.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite sports weekends of the year, just because, you know, I don't necessarily go in for all the tradition and nonsense that surrounds it, but the course is totally unique for all the reasons you just laid out. And it makes for entertaining viewing, even in a year this year where it kind of felt like Scheffler was never really in danger of losing. There were still some times where the course really put him through hell, and he came out the other side. And so, yeah, it's right up there for me in terms of sports goals to see around there. It doesn't even have to be Sunday. I'd be good with Friday.
I could even be talked into practice rounds. I don't care. I just want to see, like, I want to stand in those places. Like, I was watching Josh Allen golf with some guy on YouTube. Like, Josh Allen, pretty good golfer. And this guy gives him a 10-stroke head start, and you get to see until you play with somebody who's that good, you don't understand how the game is different for them. They're playing a completely different. You're worried about just finding a fairway. They're worried about where they are on the fairway so that they have a shot into the right portion of the green to get a makeable putt. Like, anyway, Josh Allen was talking about like like a religious experience getting to golf there and like standing in the same places that some of the best to ever do this I've ever stood. So it's really, I don't know. It's just a place. It's one of the cathedrals of sports that I would like to visit. So hopefully someday that works out. Listen, we're going to shift over to the Browns now and talk about Nick Chubb's.
Oh, you want to talk a little football?
We should talk football. I mean, I can talk golf all day, but we should, for the sake of people who have fast forwarded through that segment we just did, talk some football. So Nick is a reworked, this is not a restructure. Our guy, Jack, is very clear. It's not a restructure because that would be moving the same amount of money around and calling it a signing bonus for salary cap manipulation. This is a reworked
deal.
Don't
you dare call it a restructure.
I will not do that. You will not catch me doing that. You can call it a renegotiation if you're feeling frisky. You can do that.
Yeah, that I would allow.
Right. We'll let you do that, but that's the semantic part of this thing. So it's important to note, though, in all seriousness, that Nick gave up a lot of money. And we talked about incentives to help him get back to that. But Andrew, looking at how much money he gave up, going from a base salary of 11.7, including some per game roster bonuses and the cap number at 15.7 and 12.2 in cash, going down to a 1.125 base, a 24 signing bonus of 925, and a $225,000 roster bonus and like 2.275 in cash and a 6.2 cap number, it sort of feels like he doesn't know when he's going to play, and he's just kind of happy to be on the roster, and we'll see if I can get my way back. It's hard to read into this too much,
yeah.
But this is a significant cut, and it doesn't speak to me of a guy like, I'm going to be ready in August, and I don't think folks should have been thinking that,
right?
But it's just an important reminder here of like he did what he had to do to still make money and be on this roster.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that there are a few different things this could mean. I agree with you that the concern is that it means that the player and his agent know that they just are in a position where they don't have much leverage because no other team would be willing to sign him right now. And I think there's a different conversation that we can have or skip about how, you know, the NFL works and the Browns really putting, I think unquestionably he's right up there with Myles Garrett. I mean, Miles has probably been more productive overall in terms of value added, but I think Nick is certainly the fan favorite of the two of them. And at his high has probably been the better player for stretches. The point is they're neck and neck for the best player to be on the Browns post Joe Thomas, right? So
yeah, that's fair.
The point is that a player of that magnitude for the Browns who has done so much for the team being put in this situation doesn't feel great, to be honest with you. So
yep.
There's that. Beyond that, I think there's also beyond saying whether or not he's ready or when he'll be ready, I think there's also the question about how much Nick wants to be in Cleveland and how much he cares about making more money. Now, I mean, he did very publicly, criticize teams for shortchanging running backs within the past year. So I don't think that he's Tom Brady levels of give the team all my money, or whatever. But I do wonder how much that there's a part of him that maybe feels like he has some unfinished business and wants to stay in Cleveland. But I do tend to agree with you that the most direct interpretation of this is he is not anywhere close to being healthy. And I think that you could make the argument that this requires reframing his contributions this season as anything we get from him as a bonus.
Yeah, there's at least a gigantic level of uncertainty from his side about when he'll be ready. Maybe he's feeling on schedule, but his agent's probably like, Nick, we don't know when you touch the field with cleats and pads, we don't know how you'll feel. So let's not do anything crazy. I'm with you on the part of there's two sides I see to this. Let me phrase it this way. I think the Browns saw an opportunity to create some more money for good or bad, and they took it, but they also could have, if Nick said, I'm not doing that, like I'm not giving up it, they could have cut him. So they could have, would have been ugly. Nick could have also asked out, I'm good, cut me, I'll go somewhere else. There's clearly a desire from both sides to not let what happened in Pittsburgh be the end of his story in Cleveland.
For sure. For sure.
So they're coming up with a way here I don't know the exact, you know, figures for what he could make, like if he performs really well. So he took a $10 million pay cut to stay and 2.05 of his guarantees in his deal. And he agreed to like just over $2 million in guarantees to this deal. So maybe the incentives they baked in there are something he can achieve. I'm not sure, but it feels to me, Andrew, as we sit here, not trying to do the pessimistic thing.
Right.
We want Nick to come back late in the year when he's healthy and comfortable and ready.
Right. 100%.
Rewrite the end of his story with the Browns. And it feels very unlikely that there's a path forward with him on the team. I think the draft will tell us a little bit if they do go 54-85, but like it is hard to envision. You know, it's not, and let me say that it's not hard to envision. They could work something out. That's wrong of me to say, but like, I think we're at the point that it's very realistic now that Nick could be playing somewhere else in 2025 than maybe we thought before when you and I were of the belief, and a lot of people were of the belief, that they could give up something this year and then get a like guarantee into next year, a little bit, like maybe this type of just over $2 million guarantee into next year that worked out a way to keep him around for 2 years. But I think he's going to test free agency. And, you know, if he puts together a couple nice games at the end of the year, there could be teams willing to take a 2 year contract with him.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. And I will put off thinking about it for as long as possible because I don't like the idea of Nick Chubb playing for anybody else, no matter what state he's in, frankly. I mean, I just don't even want to consider it.
Which kind of harkens back, Andrew, to like we're talking about off air, and we're going to talk about questions that these guys are getting, Denzel and Deshaun and some of them. Deshaun's probably, if we're talking about the stadium, Deshaun's probably the only one that has a chance to play in a new stadium. Like, these guys are getting older, I think, is like what we're unfortunately being reminded of. Like, Denzel, like watching Denzel at Ohio State spring game, he had an interview, and I'm like, he sounds older than, like, he just looks older and sounds, he's like, what, 25, 26 now? So, like, these guys are the core group here. We're not used to this in Cleveland where we watch our football players maybe age 8, 9, 10 years. That's, again, unique, but I just am reminded, like, these questions these guys get asked about the stadium, it's like, Denzel's probably never going to play in that stadium if it gets built, wherever it is. And that's, like, something that I think maybe, it's not a maybe thing, it's just something we have to get used to with the cycle of, like, oh, they drafted, developed, and had a good career in Cleveland, and this is the length of that situation normally going, right? So
It's not forever. I think you want to think that maybe Myles Garrett has a chance. I you know, it's a conversation for a different time, what his extension looks like and how they're going to handle that. But even at that point, if you're talking 5 years into the future, he would be, what, 34, which is pretty old for an edge rusher. Von Miller, you know, we just saw the end of his career. But I want to go back to the Chubb thing for a second, because if we're saying now that we maybe shouldn't expect him to be a meaningful contributor until December, or potentially not at all this season, Jake, do you feel with this new information, does it change the way you feel about their running back room composition? Like, do you, if this has to be the room for the majority or all of the season, is it good enough?
Well, good enough. Yes. Is it going to be the net positive that it has been? Like, there are levels to this, right? Last year's group wasn't good enough. Whether that was they, let me put it this way. And it's hard to say that you're mad at a team for not preparing for this, but like, I had this conversation with another podcast I was visiting where Jerome Ford just wasn't, it didn't even come to his mind that he would be a focal running back this year. This past year, it was clear the workload, all of it, he wasn't ready for it. The organization wasn't ready for that sort of thing. They bring in Kareem again. They make this late trade for Pierre Strong. They failed that position. Was it defensive tackle in 2022 type of failure? Probably not, because they had a head of the room and that injury happened. But like, last year was pretty bad. This year, I think that they have addressed it enough that Jerome Ford has a full off season to prepare, mentally be ready. They also have brought in players. Two players I think are pretty good at what they're asked to do. Deontay Foreman is a nice running back who, when given opportunities, has produced. Hines has done a nice job in the pass, you know, the pass catching side. He's a relatively okay pass blocker. I think he'll be fine in an upgrade. And then we've talked about they still have time. They could still draft a guy they like, or they could get heavily involved in the UDFA market. So I think it's last year was, put it this way, 2 years ago was the best, one of the best in the NFL, largely led by Nick. Last year, not anywhere near where it's needed to be because of something that was a curveball. This year, I think it's just, it's good enough. It's good enough running back. Like, again, look at like Kansas City, some of these, like Pacheco's fine. Like they're fine. I think they can be fine at that position. It's not going to be one of the league's best, but it's fine to me, Andrew. And they can still, you know, show a commitment to that room by adding somebody if they want to.
Right. I think that's kind of where I'm at with the whole thing is if you really are, if they are, you know, getting good information from the doctors that he won't be able to be full go until, say, just throwing it out there, week 13, week 14, something like that, which is, you know, the vast majority of the season, I do think they probably still need to look at one more player because Hines, you have to remember, is also coming off of an ACL that he suffered in July. So, and is a player who's got some years on his, under his belt. So I don't know that, I don't know what Nyheim Hines looks like for the Browns as a ball carrier, right? I don't feel like that's going to be a significant portion of his role with the Browns, the more I think about it. So you're talking about, to me, you're talking about Foreman, Ford, Strong, with some Hines sprinkled in around the edges. That still doesn't feel like enough to me for a full season of the NFL. So that's where I don't think it makes sense still round two or three just because of the lack of assets. But it I think, as you said before, how they address this in the draft will probably tell us something, and we'll probably make too much out of it, honestly. But I think I think there's room for another back on this roster. I think they have to carry four because they don't have a clear number one. And I think that I would prefer somebody else have that Pierre Strong spot, as I was saying kind of at the end of last year.
Yeah, there's still time to rectify that. I would agree. Think of like the Bears with last year, Foreman, Khalil Herbert. They invested in Roschon Johnson. Like there's room for teams like this who are trying to committee it up to find some cheap answers. I think we both agree, and most people do, that they like Foreman. I'm fine with that. I don't want to like give him 200 carries type of thing here, but like, the path, like I said,
he's like a 10 to 12 carry a game guy. It feels like,
yeah, the path here will be interesting. How much they're leaning into throwing the ball more than ever, how much they're sprinkling in quarterback running, which is something that, you know, continues to make me nervous, but we'll see. It also hinges on something we really don't know, and that is Nick's time schedule here. So we'll not induce panic, but I think that there's definitely sitting here telling you that the running back room is a complete situation, I think is misleading, and we don't want to do that because I think the draft is, again, you're paying attention to people that cover the NFL league-wide. There is a world in which they are hearing things about the Browns potentially drafting a running back, and they, because a lot of them keep sending a running back to Cleveland at 84 point. Or, you know, in the second and third round. So anyway, all right, that's enough, Nick. So I think we've crossed about everything we can there from what we know. It's not going to get, unless Nick releases a video, we're not going to get many updates on this. We'll talk a bit about this in a second. Before we go to break, though, I want to talk about, listen, the Browns decided to allow Christian Kirksey and Rashard Higgins to come back and sign one-day contracts to retire as Cleveland Browns. So what's your initial thought to that, Andrew? I think that we saw some people on both sides of the spectrum with this, of this is cool, or okay, like did they do enough to garner this kind of attention? So I'm curious what you think.
I think my baseline feeling about this is, why do the players have to be Hall of Famers to deserve this type of treatment? Like, I think Christian Kirksey, I think maybe was the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee while he was here. I know that he and Higgins were involved in community stuff. They're both good dudes. They were both meaningful players to the Browns in a time where there weren't many players that fans could really get behind and get excited about. We're talking about this pre-show off the top of my head, and you know, somebody can put together a list and prove me wrong easily. it feels like these are definitely two of the top 10 most like popular players for the Browns in the 2010s. Like if you were just stacking them all up, I some of those Higgins catches.
So you think Higgins is over like Greg Little? Okay, you do? Gotcha. Just to make sure.
Listen, let's let the fans decide, Jake. Let's let the fans decide. I just think the Browns had one of the worst runs in the history of the NFL. So their two choices here are essentially either don't celebrate anything about any of those players for fear of quote-unquote embarrassment, or be nice to players that were bright spots in what were some really awful seasons of football and celebrate. Like they don't have I don't understand why there has to be a bar for this, I guess is what I'm saying. Like what there's no cost to the Browns for doing this. It's just a press conference and a photo op. I think it's lovely. And I think they should do it more often.
Yeah. Since we talked pre-show to coming to this point here, I'm kind of come around on it a little bit. Look, is there some stuff that is a little bit cringy where they're like watching the guys out there at OTAs and the Browns have tweeted something like, and this isn't anybody other than an intern or someone in the social media department who just maybe misses the mark and doesn't know the history, but wrote something like on like watching the current players take their legacy or something like carry the legacy on. And I'm like, I mean, come on. Rashard Higgins isn't 49. He's 29 here. Like, I'm wondering if Rashard Higgins is like, yo, I'm better than that cat out there or something like that. I mean, like, this it's just funny. Your point that you're making there, though, is right. You put together some of the worst football played for a decade until 2018. So whatever, you know, we want to just start this conversation around 2010, whatever. Like, you put together bad football teams and – for that, like you said, you can either ignore everything about that era or you can embrace some of the players that were bright spots of that era. Kirksey, I think I understand. He had a couple really good seasons there before he had the two seasons that he ended up leaving the organization because he was injured and the contract didn't work anymore. Rashard Higgins, a little different. You know, I guess the question would be, never crossed the 600-yard threshold, but was very important to like the social side of rebuilding the Browns brand. And Baker loved him for that era, and he had a really fun celebration. I think I looked at the stats, and I was kind of surprised, Andrew, he didn't have a season over 600 yards. I felt like he might have had like a little bit more of an impact. But I it's harmless. It's you're going to get made fun of because these are the types of guys. This is it. This is what you have. These are, you know. It'd be cool if Amari Cooper's around three more years and in 2033 we're celebrating like Amari Cooper coming back to break the guitar or whatever at the home games, right? Like,
absolutely. This will get better.
Yeah, you want it to get better, and it will. For now, I think you do have to recognize that otherwise you lose. You know, if you're trying to change the culture and you want more of your former players around, you can't go 15 years without embracing any players. It's like,
right. It can't just be Joe Thomas and a bunch of empty chairs.
Yeah. It's like Joe Hayden.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Joe, like you need some middle ground there.
You just got to make the numbers like, up if you're going to have a banquet.
Guys who are connected to the organization and still care, right? You got to try to do that a little bit here and there. So.
And I think it's important, like from a fan perspective, like football is a very physical sport. I don't think the only criteria for celebrating a player should be, were they Pro Bowl, All Pro, Hall of Fame level, right? Like these, I'm not saying that we have to like buy them drinks for the rest of their lives, but like, it's really, to me, it's the least the Browns can do to honor some players that, like, watching Rashard Higgins made me feel better at times about like the Browns. It was fun to watch somebody play with a little bit of swagger, and Christian Kirksey, probably on a different team, does make a Pro Bowl, to be honest with you. So I just think like, I don't think that we as football fans have to be disdainful of everything that isn't the greats. And I think we can just celebrate like Rashard Higgins had a dozen really cool catches. Christian Kirksey was the leader of that defense for a few years, invented a very cool thing to shout.
He did do that. Dog check.
Is not, I mean, considering how much this fan base struggles to come up with nicknames and things to shout, that's nothing to sneeze at. So
he had to be the leader of wearing the worst uniforms.
And there's that. And they had to put those things on every week. So, I just think, Like there's no penalty for celebrating. This is also true in your own lives, by the way. Like you don't have to wait for some grand special occasion to break open that bottle of wine you've been saving. Like just enjoy yourselves, man. Live a little. Like every day can be a fun celebration if you want it to be. There's no rule against that.
I know Jarvis Landry was pretty bitter on Twitter a month ago, but if Jarvis wants to come back, if he comes back to Cleveland, any
with
fashion,
open arms, smash that guitar, baby. Let's do it.
Yeah, they will give him. They will give him a ton of love and support.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, Jarvis is a little more on the spectrum of what I was just saying there with Landry, where he thinks he should still be on the field. That's kind of a threshold you just have to get through as a guy who's not being pursued anymore and you're used to being pursued. So maybe that day will come over the next, three, 4 years. We'll see. I just know that, like you said, Andrew, maybe he didn't make a Pro Bowl. Maybe he didn't do anything. I think Jarvis actually did make a Pro Bowl. But I think that, like, you don't have to be, you know, Demarius Randall, one good year, handed to you the football. Everyone loved that. He would be
bring
like,
him back.
Yeah, put him on the sideline during a game and you know, put him in that t-shirt of him handing you a football, and the people would probably love it.
My favorite moment of that season, I think.
It's up there. It's definitely up there. All right, so listen, we're going to take a break, come back, and on the way out the door, hit some of these press conference quotes that mattered. As there were, you know, I think more Deshaun than anybody had some stuff that matters here, so we want to listen to those. So we'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day. And that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. All right, Andrew, we get the first day of off-season workouts where the Browns are putting some of their people up in front of the media. Three current guys. Now, we're not going to really cover much from Higgins and Kirksey. You can – some good quotes out there you can go find. I think we've given those fellas due diligence. Kevin Stefanski talked today, which if we are a duo here who knows anything, Kevin doesn't say much. Denzel, also not the best quote you will ever receive. Very agreeable guy. Kind of that conversation point is a
he player. Seems friendly as hell.
Friendly as hell, and he will tell you like what you want to hear. Like Denzel's just so agreeable. And like I feel like Denzel would be like, hey man, I'm kind of feeling like he'll say I want pizza for dinner, and you're like, nah, I'm kind of feeling like, you know, Chinese. And he's like, you know what, yeah, we'll do Chinese. Like
yeah,
he's like,
I could kill a General Tso's. Yeah,
he feels like the friend that you want in your group who's just like never arguing,
yeah,
chill.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so
that are you not going to read the NCAA football quote?
Listen, I want to. He knows Road to Glory. I'd tell that guy's put in some hours. That's all I'm saying.
So that's the goal here, right? Is to get Ward on the podcast and play a little NCAA 25.
Denzel, you listen, you find this, someone tells you about it. We got a spot for you in June. Let's make it happen. No, July. We'll be out to July. We'll make it happen in July. You might be busy. We'll find time. So yeah, Kevin, Denzel had some questions about like, you know, listen, folks are pressing him for stuff on Greg Newsom. It's not surprising. That's a juicy quote. He's not giving anything away. He's basically he's basically saying what he should be saying, which is that he's an important part of what we do, et cetera, et cetera. But did you have anything that stood out to you, Andrew, from Denzel?
Well, I was just going to mention that Newsom spoke at a girls flag football event later in the day. And basically echoed the same things that Denzel said, just in terms of feeling really comfortable with his role and liking being in Cleveland and appreciating everybody. So
I think he learned from last year, whatever happened.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that as much as we have thought that this is a thing that makes a ton of sense, and I suppose there's still a chance that somebody bowls them over with an offer.
Mm-hmm.
It seems pretty clear at this point that the team hasn't prioritized getting him off the roster.
Yeah. They're waiting. I would imagine they got some offers they didn't like. So,
yeah. But I think it's a bigger conversation for later in the offseason about how their approach to all of these like tougher decisions about their players is bring them all back.
Bring them all back. That's what we're looking at right now. So Ward, he did get asked about the stadium, and he's kind of like, I understand, appreciate the history of where we're at right now. But he's also like, I think fans would adapt. So, which is what most people would say, right? Denzel's a Cleveland guy, Northeast Ohio guy. So he understands it's a little better. I mean, I don't know. I can't confirm who Denzel was really a fan of growing up, but he at least knows and understands the history of the Browns being up from around that area. Kevin, nothing really groundbreaking for him. Andrew, did he give any injury updates of significance or not?
He didn't give any firm updates. He was asked about a lot of different people. He did mention that, you know, Hines is still going through rehab.
Yeah.
The three tackles are all still rehabbing, so none of them are, I guess, 100% healthy still, which I think is maybe a little bit of a surprise with DeJuan Jones, but I don't think we ever got full clarity on what that knee injury was for him.
I watched him hop around Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
He's good. He'll be fine.
All right. There you go. So we'll cross that one off the list.
Did you see that video of him?
No, like, I did. I'm joking around. Yeah. Fine. Yeah. He's fine.
we try to keep everybody calm, Andrew.
didn't really give many updates on Watson or Chubb either. So yeah. Watson talked about his own injury a lot more. And so, you know, that's really. Watson was the one who was more forthcoming in general.
Let's do that. Let's dive into Deshaun Watson's quotes. And listen, we've covered a lot of these press conferences. This might be the longest duration we've ever seen. A lot of questions were fielded.
Yeah, we were joking around pre-show that maybe Peter John Baptiste was on vacation or had a dentist appointment or something, because typically these things go about 10 to 12 minutes.
And that's it.
And they're pretty brisk. Like and often you don't even see them really follow up on the same question because they keep things moving. But you mentioned Ward got hammered with the Newsom stuff. Stefanski took a few multiple questions about the play calling stuff. Was at one point asked about the whereabouts of Mike Vrabel, which is very funny. considering he's in a consultant's role. Like, the whole point of that, I mean, Paul DePodesta isn't in the building every day. Yeah. I don't think Mike Vrabel is probably making that commute on a daily basis.
He's certainly not getting in front of a microphone, tell you that.
Right. So, yeah, I agree that, I mean, hats off to the media. I appreciate their tenacity. It felt like a different style of questioning and a little bit more in depth than what we're used to.
Yeah, they opened up with questions about Deshaun's, you know, surgery, his rehab process. And then the third question he received is, are you a good patient? Are you following orders to a T? All right, so we're moving here. We got the questions rolling. I think the stuff that started to become interesting, Andrew, was the Ken Dorsey stuff and changes to the offense. So let's listen to this quote about this question here. The question is, now that you're allowed back in the classroom and can talk football, what's your impression of the tweaks and changes that Dorsey and Stefanski plan to implement offensively? A very blunt question, probably not phrased that you would normally get an answer, but Deshaun gave a pretty good answer. Let's listen to that one right now.
Yeah, it's very, really good. I mean, a lot of opportunities for the receivers to be able to really showcase their skills. A lot of guys moving around, a lot of guys being able to play different spots. And then myself to just be free and not really kind of controlled in a sense. It's really just kind of go out there and be able to, you know, showcase spread offense, throw it around, run around, and make some plays happen. So that's very exciting for myself.
Some interesting stuff in there, Andrew, calling it, you know, talking about guys moving around a lot. I think that this is a thing with a receiver depth that they have. Going to be guys in and out of certain positions. A lot of motion, right? I think calling it a spread offense stands out because I think they are going to live in gun a lot this year, man.
Yeah, some of those words are words that we haven't heard. Certainly, spread does not describe what most people in the NFL think of Kevin Stefanski's offense. So one of the things that I'm interested in immediately is, like, how does this change the perception of Kevin as a coach? I mean, Ken Dorsey certainly has an opportunity to kind of reverse some of the damage that was done, frankly, with the way things ended in Buffalo and being fired there when he probably arguably didn't deserve it and was scapegoated. There's other coaches on the staff that I could say the same thing about. It's a very interesting thing, but if you're looking for like a list of buzzwords that Deshaun Watson could have used that would kind of help us lean forward in our seats with anticipation about what this is actually going to look like, he really hit every single one of them, because the motion to me, even more so than how they align, motion is the thing that was missing the most last year.
Yeah.
And then I think that positional versatility thing is so key as well. It's something that this is something that maybe I am making too much out of, but the Giovanni Ricci signing, like, that's not just not a player that has been on the team the last few years in terms of like an H-back type. So I do think a little bit more positionless offensive football changes the way that the roster is constructed a little bit. And I think that's something we'll have to continue to watch. But I would say overall, if you were looking for something to get, you know, folks like us that are parsing, literally sitting here on a podcast, parsing the press conference answers, it's as exciting of a sort of glimpse, because just contextually, the Browns were like prohibited from sharing or like, you know, teaching this stuff to Deshaun Watson before this week. So he had a playbook or whatever they've put together so far, but this is the first time that they've been these rules are in place to protect the players. This is the first week that they were allowed to say, like, you are going to do this. This is the type of stuff we're going to specialize in. So him giving this answer today is specifically meaningful because of that fact.
Yeah. His first introduction to really what they're going to be doing. You talk about buzzwords, spread, motion, is all the stuff we want to hear. Gets this podcast hot and bothered, right? Love to hear that stuff. We want them to be different this year. Feels like they will be. I think the gun stuff is they're going to lean into that, and just a little bit more confirmation bias. All right, he did mention throwing full speed, Andrew. So yep. He was asked about, you know, full speed throwing. I'll play that little clip for you right now, but I think this is a really encouraging answer.
Have you been able to let one go yet, or is it still too early in the process?
I've been able to throw. I think it's still early to really let go. When you say let it go, as far as like you're talking like 50 yards downfield or... Yeah, I'm throwing full speed. Everything is fluid motion, no hinging or And when I say hinging, you know, my release point when I'm throwing and things like that, everything is fluid and motion is really good. The velocity and the strength is really good. So it's been well.
He was asked about labrum stuff here, which I think is, you know, the interesting thing was that the labrum was partially torn and not fully torn. And he goes into a little bit of what happened with the glenoid situation. And I want to play that for you now. So you can, if you didn't hear this, you can fully understand a little bit of where he's coming from with the shoulder. So here's his answer on the labrum repair and sort of a little bit of the defining the injury.
No, not the full labrum. So the glenoid, the bone that chipped off in my joint, is called, of course, the glenoid, which is attached to the labrum. So when the glenoid came off the bone, it was the labrum was the one that was hanging the bone. So he had to pretty much repair that and put that together. So he just pretty much made sure the labrum was good. But it wasn't a full labrum. It was just a partial of the labrum that was connected to the glenoid.
Andrew, the question he took on the toughest part of the process, the physical dealing with the pain, or the patience you have to show to fully recover, the answer here is very interesting. So we are going to play this answer where he talks about when this injury actually happened, which is something that makes you raise your eyebrows a little bit. So we're going to run that one for you right now, where he talks through again the physical and mental elements, and then when the injury happens. This is new news to us.
What's been tougher through this whole process? The physical, the pain, you know, dealing with the pain, or the patience you have to, you know, because you talked about the specific plan and, you know, the way they've set it up with load management and everything. You know, the patience you have to show to, you know, recover fully to get back to where you hope to be.
If I had a pick, I would say neither, but because the pain haven't really been a problem. And I think that's one thing that Dr. Eletros was super, super surprised, especially when I first got to him in November, is how did I play in that Baltimore game? Really, the Cardinals game too, but especially the Baltimore game. He was amazed by that. But so if I can play through that right now, the glenoid is healed, you know, and it's just building that endurance and the management of just throwing footballs constantly and not getting it tired. So I think that part is good. As far as being patient, I mean, I've gained and learned how to be patient the last 3 years. So for me, that's not a big part either. I think it's just honestly just staying focused and on track of what they're allowing me to do, and just taking it one step at a time. And if I can do that and focus on myself to be the better person, be the better teammate and player that I can be through this process, then I think that's the best thing.
Sean, are you saying that, is there some thought that perhaps you suffered the fracture before the Baltimore game, that you maybe had some of the fracture going on in the Cardinals game?
It's possible. I'm not sure. He was just amazed how I was able to play those 2 weeks, dealing with what the pain, especially for what he's seen over his years with baseball guys, not really football guys, but baseball guys that kind of dealt with you know, shoulder injuries.
So why do they think perhaps? I'm sorry. Why do they think perhaps now that, because we, of course, thought that you fractured the shoulder during the Baltimore game, like first half, and came out and played that amazing second half. But what's the new, you know, information here? Like, why do they think maybe you suffered it earlier? And when do they think that you suffered it? And do you remember when you might have suffered it now?
I don't really remember. I was just, of course, from the Tennessee game, I was dealing with, you know, just shoulder injuries. So I think, you know, with him, just over his years, just kind of, he don't know, you know, because it don't really happen in football with this injury. It's a lot of baseball guys. So for him, it just goes back to his baseball experience. So that's why he was just kind of worried. No one knows when it actually happened. Or when that bone actually came apart. I knew for sure in Baltimore, though, because I heard some clicking sounds. And that's one of the indicators that, you know, something is wrong with that joint. But that's probably a question for Dr. Eletros and why he pretty much said that. I just know that he was just very amazed how I finished both of those games.
All right, so he was asked about it afterward, Andrew. Someone specifically followed up with him saying, do you think that perhaps you suffered the fracture before the Ravens game and that maybe some of the fracture going, some of the fracture happened in the Cardinals game? He says it's possible and I'm not sure. The doctor was just amazed I was able to play those 2 weeks dealing with that pain. So if he's dealing with the pain in the Cardinals game, maybe it I hate doing this again because we're going down the path of like what we did last year. But I had pointed out in film review, and I've talked to you about it a lot and our OBR guys, he took a gnarly right shoulder hit on a scramble where he ran back toward the middle of the field and a defensive tackle went full speed into his shoulder. He didn't see him. That hit makes me think that injury could have happened there more than the Patrick Queen one. So like that would make sense to me. But again, you're kind of playing this whole guessing game and it kind of is bothersome that like, he doesn't even know when the injury happened. Like this, above all else, Andrew, this shoulder stuff happened last year. And I felt like nobody had a firm understanding of like the when, the how, all of that stuff, like all of that. Like we still don't know so many parts of this. Right. And I feel like the guy who's the source of the injury. Yeah. Maybe I don't know when it happened.
Right.
Is cavalier about like the whole thing too.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, he's talking about the Arizona game, and I agree with you that he took out that wicked hit that you did such a good job of pointing out in real time. But this goes all the way back to Tennessee. It really does. This goes back to the third week of the season because that's when the injury started, and he wasn't able to play against Baltimore, which was a surprise to the team. And then he's out for multiple weeks, comes back against Indianapolis, and cannot function as a quarterback. And then he's out another week, and then he comes back and takes another vicious hit against the Cardinals. So my overall feeling on this, having heard what Watson had to say, is I don't think that the Browns know when he got hurt. And I don't think that they had a good handle on the severity of his shoulder injury as the season was playing out. And I understand that there does necessarily have to be some level of subjectivity with these decisions because you're trusting the player to report their levels of discomfort and what they're able to do and all those sorts of things. And I think we both have a good enough sense from the quarterback now that he's not maybe going to be the most forthcoming about his limitations. But overall, this is not a fun road to walk down because it's in the past. It to a certain extent doesn't matter, but I don't think that based on the way that he's talking about this now and the way that that timeline played out last fall, there should be any confidence from fans that the Browns are, one, being honest with them about player injuries, and two, doing a good enough job of understanding the severity of some of these injuries that are a little more subjective in the moment. And it's, to me, it's deeply concerning because the team was, pardon the pun, hamstrung by injury issues all of last season. And I think if there's not a serious self-reflection for them on how that process works, and I don't know if there has been or not, but there needs to be is all I'm trying to say, because I think Watson's comments make it clear to me that the team did not have a great handle on his injury. Because
I'm not even sure the doctor was good at this, because if you listen to him,
that's what I'm saying.
They followed whoever they're sending him to for the shoulder. Like, he was asked specifically, what's the new information here? Like, why do you think maybe you suffered it earlier? When do they think that you suffered it? And do you remember when you might have suffered it? So he's like, I don't really remember. I was just, of course, from the Tennessee game, I was dealing with, shoulder injuries. So I think with him just over the years, this is the doctor, just because he says, just kind of because it doesn't really happen in football with this injury. It's a lot of baseball guys. So for him, it just goes back to his baseball experience. And like, that's not encouraging. I don't want to go down this road anymore. We've done it enough. Like it just was totally mishandled. And I don't find myself listening to a mid off season press conference about a massive shoulder situation, feeling confident that they still can't pin down when it happened, that this is just going to be fixed in perpetuity. Because again, is Watson going to change his play style? I don't think so. And I don't have any proof of that until he actually does it. So like maybe try to send him to somebody who has helped a quarterback specifically with shoulder injuries moving forward, so that in the offseason, you're very honed in on what happened, why it happened, and how I prevent it. Just a thought, Andrew. And I'm not, and again, we can move off the topic and be done here, but like, because I know that it's probably making some fans nauseous because we spent so much time on it. But good Lord, we're in April of 2024. And like, if you go through, guys, and listen to that whole presser, I don't come out of that presser feeling any more educated on what happened to Deshaun's shoulder other than like the definition of the injury, but like honing in and fixing it and getting it right in the future than like when I saw him get hurt in the, whatever, the Baltimore game that he left or the news happened, I guess.
Agreed. 100%. And I think that it really underlines that the player does. I think if Deshaun knew, he would say, cause he's talking about it a lot. So if he knew more, he would say there's no reason for him to be vague or misleading about that at this point. And so that tells you that there's just a ton of gray area with this, which again, I understand that with these injuries because there's swelling involved. It can be hard to pinpoint exactly what's going on. But I think the answer that the Browns came to, which is we'll just kind of keep throwing them out there and see what happens, was in retrospect very clearly the wrong one. And to your point, if this is going to be an ongoing issue, if he's going to continue to put himself in harm's way, then the way that they handled it will be the way that they handle it in the future.
And he's talking again, the question kind of came up about somebody going through something similar. The more he talks about it, the more it sounds like, is this, it's not what Drew Brees dealt with, but it's similar in the scarcity. He said in the football space, it's definitely different. But like I said, it was a lot of baseball guys, a couple pitchers that I got close to, a guy that pitched with the Dodgers last year. Ironic, you can't remember his name. He pitched, he had a very similar injury. The guy last week who reached out to me from Boston, Trevor Story, whose season just ended for the Red Sox, he did the very same thing. He said, so, you know, there's different baseball guys that came through. I think a volleyball girl, she had a similar injury, labrum. A couple basketball guys that were there too. So, yeah, we just, like I said, we all came in there. We put the work in. We were able to communicate because we're dealing with the same things. We help each other out. It's making it sound like this is a super rare and like in a football space, unique injury that I'm like, oh God, I kind of don't want to hear that because everything around, you know, listen, the Drew Brees thing worked out. Drew didn't take many hits like that after, but like it worked out, but you're definitely nervous about this, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that I found really interesting from a reporter that was there was Tom Withers tweeted after it was over that he didn't feel any more clarity about where Watson is in his rehab and what his timeline to return is than he did going into the press conference. Now, to a certain extent, you understand that, right? Because the Browns are going to take this as it goes. They're not going to commit to a return timetable and then have to push it back or whatever because that sets up a whole other story. But I trust Tom. I mean, Tom Withers has been doing this a long time. I have a lot of respect for him. He's not going to say something like that if he doesn't feel like the team did not do a good job of communicating the injury. Still, the rehab process. And my point here with all of this is that that was a big part of the problem last season. And it's a recurring problem for this Browns team, this version of the Browns with Andrew Berry and Paul DePodesta and Kevin Stefanski. They do not communicate injuries well, and it leads to situations that open them up to questions about how they are handling injuries generally. And they might be fine with that. They might say, well, we can ignore that completely. But I do think at a certain point, there is some level of transparency that helps you. I'm not saying full transparency. Some level of transparency helps fans and the media understand the situation in a way that they can make sense of it and not assume the worst about what's going on. And I think that's necessary from time to time.
Well, the thing about Mayfield's shoulder injury that happened all those years ago is that like other quarterbacks had dealt with that. So you had an understanding of what a quarterback looked like who played with it, what the surgery looked like, what the recovery process looked like. I mean, again, Watson is telling you here that he doesn't have a core, like anybody to lean into from the football world that has dealt with this. So I'm just not kind of trying to create any listener you know, feelings here. I'm just telling you where I'm at, which is you're playing baseball and volley. These are different things. Human beings attacking your shoulder the way it happens in football is very different. How well is this going to hold up over time? I've got, again, like Tom said, like you mentioned, I've got some concerns that we're not, you know, put in a good place based on this press conference. Let's put it that way. I think he can get back to throwing and be fine. I just think that, like, what the future looks like with this injury having happened is where I'm the most nervous, and their handling of it. If it pops up again and it's week five and his shoulder's clicking, are they going to have an answer for that? Is it okay to keep playing? Like, what's the solution to the situation?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. I think these are all, again, these are fair questions because they have not given more information about the situation. So I think it feels irrefutable at this point that it was mishandled in 2023. So then your worry necessarily goes to how they would handle it this season. What you would hope is that that's behind the thinking of adding Jameis Winston and Tyler Huntley to this roster, right? Because you're in a position now where if Watson experiences any discomfort, you shut him down and let these other guys who have started NFL games play. Because the last thing you want is a repeat of that Colts game where him not being ready to start almost cost them the game, or the Baltimore game where they thought he was going to be ready to start and then he wasn't, and then you had to throw a rookie quarterback with no game plan and no experience into the fire against the Ravens defense. They had multiple games last year that were impacted by their inability to prepare properly for how this injury affected their team.
Right.
And they can't allow that to happen again this year.
And, like, above all else with Deshaun Watson, I say it all the time, he needs to play. If he's ever going to meet the contract standard, he has to get live football reps and just play. And this, again, not the most encouraging stuff you want to hear, but we'll keep our optimism full, our glass half full, and hope that it works out for the best. But again, we try to shoot you straight on this podcast about, like, what they're saying.
Listeners going, that was half full.
Yeah. Question mark. I get it. I just,
I mean, I listen. Yeah. Like you said, we do try and be honest about these things. This is not naysaying or doom fear mongering or whatever. This is just what the quarterback said himself. And again, I understand, like you mentioned earlier, Kevin Stefanski doesn't really want to give much of a quote. I understand the reasons for that. I understand why he handles media the way that he does. I think from an organizational standpoint, one of the things that Andrew Berry has started to do is these little opening comments where he says some things that are pretty revealing about their thought process and how they handle things. There is room for that for the head coach as well if he wants to get on board at any point. Like, he could just say, I'm not going to take any questions about Deshaun Watson. Here's the status of his rehab. Here's who he's working with. Everything is as expected and on course for him to be ready for the 2025 season or 2024 season, Freudian slip. And we think, you know, we think he's in good shape. But he has said that he's in good shape, but he has not addressed the whole thing comprehensively,
yeah,
is how I'm trying to say it.
Yeah, hasn't left those of us who have to conversate and write on this stuff for a living, like, in an understanding way to express confidence to you guys who are fans. And again, it all could work out. That'd be great. We'd love that to happen. But for looking back to project forward, is the quarterback going to protect himself? And is there a full comprehensive understanding of what situations get him into that with his shoulder? And, like, hey, you can't take a direct hit. If you do, this is the result. I'm curious about all of that. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. A lot of stuff covered here today. Hopefully you enjoyed the podcast. Rate and review it if you can, guys. Means a lot to us when you do that. Some of you have left some really fantastic and very kind comments, and we want to thank you for that. So much appreciated. Join us live for the OBR draft special. We'll be live all 3 days. Make sure you're tuned in to Twitch and the YouTube to consume that content. And we will have plenty more coming up leading up to the draft. So be checking out theobr.com. We appreciate you guys very much for taking the time out of your day to find this podcast, whenever that is. Check back with us here on Thursday. We'll have some more content for you guys. So again, as we always say, be well. Go Browns.